Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. Michael Wilbon's coming up in just a little bit, and I'm looking at the highlights again here, guys. Obviously, we know how this is going to end with Michael hitting the shot over Brian Russell of the Utah Jazz, but is that the final shot of the show, or how do you think they wrap this up? Because we're down to the final two episodes.
Yeah, that's probably the final shot of the show. You're going to see it. You're going to see it a bunch in episode 7 and 8. I mean, I'm sorry, 9 and 10, but that'll be like the final goodbye or whatever. You know, and they may show his press conference or something, but that's pretty much it.
I do wonder, like, it was a storybook ending to end on that shot that was, you know, had an epilogue that most of us would rather forget. I would hope it would end on that shot, but I get the feeling that he would feel the need to talk about the Washington Wizards time just to button it up, you know? So I would prefer the shot, but I think we're going to get some Wizards.
You know what I wouldn't mind seeing either is his thoughts on all of the guys that came after him, all of the great players that are great players, at least in part because of their desire to be like Mike, because of the way that they watched Michael Jordan play the game, that we all know about Kobe and how similar he was, but LeBron James and Kevin Durant and whoever else it might be that came into the game because they watched Michael Jordan do his thing.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great, but it'll kind of be like, you know, Aretha Franklin used to be asked about the great singers after her, and she would always throw shade because she could never put anyone on her level or even, you know, it doesn't even like being in a discussion. She didn't even like discussing Whitney Houston that much. She didn't give her the compliments because she was so protective of her place as the queen. And I get the sense Michael is kind of that same ilk. Like, he would much rather just say they're all great or they're great, than to isolate and say, well, this guy's not, this guy's on my level. But I get the sense that he'll be more sort of political with that response.
Key, was that a challenge ever to watch other great players and not be able to see that they're just great players? Was there a lens that because you were the first pick, because you had the career that you had, that you look at other guys like, eh, or is greatness greatness?
No, greatness is greatness. The way that I knew good players or great players, whatever you want to call them, I knew because I strongly believe I have an eye for talent. I know talent when I see it and also know hype when I see it. And I could tell you the players that's overhyped that just they're okay, but because they got all the package and the paint and they do a certain thing, people hype them up. But at the end of the day, they not really like that. You know certain guys that – guys, like when I would go against a defensive back and they would talk about how great he is, I'm like, man, I know that dude ain't good, man. I watched that other dude that I know ain't good do something to him. So imagine what I'm getting ready to do to him. I've watched. You know, you sit back and you look at the dude and they like, man, that Travis Rogers, Travis is good, man. You see what he did to so-and-so? It's like, well, the dude he did it to ain't good. Y'all got him good because that's what y'all decided to do. Wait till I get a hold of him. He's going to be crying walking after the game.
Here's what I wonder, whether or not, and let's just cut to the chase, whether or not the name LeBron James is mentioned or an image is shown or he discusses him. I mean, that's ultimately what we're looking for, because he's already talked about Kobe and the relationship is well known and check.
But LeBron wasn't in the league. LeBron wasn't in the league, though, at the time.
No, I understand that. But we're talking about Travis's question, which is the guys that came after him that were inspired by him. LeBron has said multiple times that Jordan inspired him, that Jordan was like the man. He's wearing 23 for a reason. So even though they didn't play against each other, Key, to your point, when Mike retired, LeBron came in the very next year. But if it's about the guys that came after him, LeBron at this point.
I would think that the documentary is not going to have a conversation about post Michael Jordan's career opposed to 1998. Therefore, they're probably not going to talk about the current NBA.
Legacy, and I think it's an incredible part of his legacy, a really meaningful part of his legacy, is all the guys that came in, because
he paved the way for him.
He paved the way with a certain style and a certain way of going about conducting business that other guys have emulated. Because the Kobe thing makes perfect sense, because Kobe Bryant was as close to the basketball version of Michael Jordan as far as stylistics.
Yeah,
and
but
approach.
But remember, Travis, Kobe Bryant played against him in an All-Star game. So mm-hmm. the All-Star game was part of waving him off. I'm here now. Move out of the way. It's Madison Square Garden. It's my last All-Star. So that part you could talk about. But as far as getting into the Kawhi Leonards, the LeBron Jameses, the Kevin Durants, I just don't see them going that way, because if I was producing the doc, I probably would not touch up on where we are in basketball today. I would just talk about 98.
Because we know this story, and we've been watching this through the first 8 episodes, we know the major beats of the story. It's still incredibly compelling and exciting to watch, but it just feels like it needs an ending other than the shot against Brian Russell, because we know that that shot goes in. We know what happened after that. We know that that was the 6th championship that he never lost in the finals. We know that he went to Washington. It feels like we need something that isn't exactly what we're going to expect.
It would be nice, but, just thinking about, narrative, ending on that shot, and the shot being frozen, and he stood at that line for as long as he has. Having Michael Jordan talk about what was going through his head at that shot with the voiceover would be perfect. And then having him wrap it up as the shot's fading to black would be perfect. Would be absolutely chilling and perfect. Anything beyond that, in its form as an epilogue, to me, is anticlimactic. But you can package it so that the hairs in your arms are raising up, the way that he talks about why I pushed so hard to be a player. Having him talk about what was on his mind.
Oh, absolutely. But he's going to do that. He's going to describe why he decided to move B. Russ aside, why he did those. So he's going to have a conversation for sure. He's going to explain that. That's 100%. He has to, because ending it without doing that would be an injustice to the documentary. So he's got to tell us when he came out of the timeout, what they thought, da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
He's going to be on me. Oh, no, he's going sure to give us that.
He's got to do that last minute, like an episode of Detail.
Yeah, no, he's going to do that.
Break it down step by step.
And hopefully they went and got B. Russ and talked to B. Russ about it.
But I want it to end after that. I don't want to hear about them press conferences. I don't want to hear about I became a wizard. I don't want to hear any of that.
It has to include the decision to retire again, right? It maybe you don't go all the way to him returning for a third time to go to Washington, but it can't just end with the ball going through the net and him describing it and then saying, fade to black. It has to be, and then I walked away from it again, right?
What if he took the NBA Finals, man?
then it would have been a great story, but it didn't end up that way at all. And we all know what it's like watching your favorite TV show that goes on one episode too long, or two episodes, or season too long. And we also know what it's like watching a season finale or a series finale, and it has like 15 different endings. After a while, you just don't care anymore.
One time for me is Michael Jordan the greatest to ever live, LZ?
The greatest to ever live?
In hoops, man.
I mean, Dr. King.
Man, stop it. Man, you know, all right.
Keep that in mind. Michael Wilbon from ESPN. Great piece on the undefeated Michael Jordan's ruthless pursuit of winning is up right now. Mike, thanks for coming back on the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. LZ went Dr. Martin Luther King on Keyshawn.
Yeah, he won't. Hey, look. Hey, Mike, he won't tell me. He won't just say Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player ever. He won't say it.
Mike, he asked me who was the greatest to ever live, and I just said, well, Dr. King and Jesus were pretty good, so I don't know. that's all I'm trying to do is answer the man's question. That's all.
You got the first laugh out of me today, man. That was good.
So, the story that's going on right now, Michael, on ESPN, are comments based on Charles Barkley saying that Michael was selective in terms of who he targeted for his is vitriol. Is there any validity to that from your perspective?
I don't know. I wasn't in practice. But from what I've heard over the years, I mean, you know, look, Keyshawn knows this better than the rest of us. A coach has whipping boys. And one of the things we hear about Bill Belichick is one of the reasons that he's so masterful. He's able to get on Tom Brady. He's able to get, well, if we know Michael got on Scotty, because we've heard it, we know. And he got on Steve Kerr, and he got on Will Perdue. Perdue and Winnington say this. I mean, how many people are left? I mean, if he got on the best player, one of the three to five best players to me of his generation was Scottie Pippen playing with Michael. Michael got on Scottie. So if he got on Scottie, I don't know. I'd have to ask Charles about, you know, sort of what he means by that. And I talk to Charles often. I'm going to pick up the phone when I'm done with you guys and say, Chuck, tell me what you meant. Because as far as I know, we know he got on BJ. I mean, I've heard from those guys. I know those guys individually. And it doesn't seem like Jordan spared anybody from what I – we know he got on Horace Grant. So I don't know who's left. I don't know what that means. Like Rodman, I don't know. Maybe by then it was different. Maybe Rodman was a different guy. We've heard Michael say Rodman is one of the smartest players he ever was around. So I'm interested to find out, like, who got left out of Michael's selective prosecution.
Well, see, Will Bond is saying exactly what I said earlier about the conversation, LZ, is that there are players that are made men. He got on Scottie Pippen early on, and as Scottie became a made man, it's now time to move on to somebody else. You ain't going to mess with Dennis Rodman because Dennis Rodman might, you know, you don't want to, that's fractured as it is already. So you want to leave that alone.
But Key and Mike, I would just say, and I haven't talked to Charles either, but I would assume based upon the content from Sunday that it's not about getting on the player. It's about putting your hands on the player, being physical with the player. I think that's what the delineation. And again, I haven't talked to Charles, but I would assume based upon Sunday, that's what he's talking about.
Well, I think, you know, we'll find out. Also, maybe he's talking about that phrase to me says Charles is talking about something very specific. So I'm interested to see sort of what it is he meant by that. And look, Charles has been in practices with Michael with the Dream Team. And so he has a sense of sort of how Michael is in those practices, you know, who he took on. We know he took on Magic, and we know, you know, Chuck Daly had to, like, pull him off Clyde Drexler. But I don't know, you know, who else, like, Michael might have gone at in practice in that context of the Dream Team, which is, of course, different from the Bulls. But, man, when you talk to those guys, and Charles and Michael and Magic have told me over the years, and David Robinson and Chris Mullin, that those were the most intense practices and scrimmages, that some of the most intense they were ever a part of. You know, those guys played on teams that either won championships or played championships. So that's quite a statement. And I wonder how Jordan functioned and if it was different than the way he functioned with the Bulls in that sense.
Michael Wilbon joining us here on The Morning Show. He's got a piece. Michael Jordan's ruthless pursuit of winning is up on The Undefeated right now. And Mike, you know, he talks a lot about, was he a nice guy? His teammates talking about, was he a nice guy? And obviously at the time, he was tough on his teammates. He was tough on the coaching staff and everybody else. Does he care now? Because watching him talk about this and trying to explain why he approached it the way that he does it bother him that he's not perceived as a nice guy?
That's a great question. Yes, he cares. He cares. He might disagree with me. No, he won't. He's talked about it. You see it right there. He says, this is why I did it. He got emotional because he wants people to understand why it is that he did things the way he did it. And he knows that might not happen. I have said to Michael multiple times, including last week, why do you care? You know, it's like, you're Michael Jordan. Well, you don't need to care about this. And he has waved me off and said, you know, he doesn't say I do care, but clearly the actions say that he cares. So, yeah, I mean, this is why he's doing a documentary. This is why, because all those times, look, a lot of us have known about these episodes. All his teammates did, and a few people in the media did. we've known about these things for decades, and we have said to him, I have said to him, can I write about this? Let me talk about this. Let me write about this. And he was like, no, because people are not going to understand. And so when Jason Hare, the director, said, okay, this is your chance to make them understand, that's why this documentary was made. Because Michael did see this as his chance to explain himself and his method, you know, the method to the madness, if you will. And so I've known, and I know those players understood, because I know Will Perdue and Bill Winnington, and I talk to those guys. Those guys are media. I see them all the time. And they talk about what happened, and they go, yeah, he was a great teammate. It worked. And so even though they think he crossed the line, you know, they're fine with it. The question is, how is the rest of the world with it? And Michael does care. I don't know why he cares so much, but he does.
Will Bond, eight episodes have aired thus far. Who has been the one guy outside of Jerry Krause who's looked bad in all of this? We all have our different opinions.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's Krause. Look, I know the 1.8-second situation with Scotty. Any retelling of that, no matter who retells it, no matter when it is retold, that's going to look bad. Like, period. I get it. But to me, Scotty's body of work overrides that. I mean, none of us wants to be judged by our worst moment only.
You do understand. Hey, Will Bond, you do understand I disagree with you as far as the 1.8. I can't. That's my man, Scotty, my man, but I just, Scotty, you know better.
Yeah, I don't like any doubling down on it. You know, I don't. I look, and I was very critical. I've said to Scotty, who obviously now I work with, and I've known Scotty a long time. I said to Scotty double-digit years ago, I was one of the people that was too critical, and I apologize. And he was like, you don't need to do that. I'm like, yeah, I do. Because I think everybody was just hyped on the criticism of Scotty. And look, you can do that on that moment. You can. But I just think people get – I think that cannot define a career that is helped produce six championships.
No, it shouldn't. It should define a career, no question.
Won six, just the two of them and Phil. And they're the only ones. I mean, everybody else got three or two or whatever. But, I tend to grimace. And I hate that 1.8. You know it's got to be retold. You can't not retell that story. I just think that Scotty, I still go back to his resume being so unbelievable that should be a footnote and not a defining characteristic.
Michael Wilbon, ESPN, the undefeated Michael Jordan's ruthless pursuit of winning is up now. It's a great read. Mike, appreciate you coming on with us this morning. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you, sir.
Listen, you know, all right, you guys. Appreciate you. Good to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
You got it. All right, let's come back and talk about a couple of those things, including what Michael Wilbon said right there. That's why he's doing this documentary. He does care about what people think about him right now. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so thanks again to Michael Wilbon for coming on and talking about The Last Dance with us again. His piece on The Undefeated is up right now, Michael Jordan's Ruthless Pursuit of Winning. And I just want to read this to you guys real quick because I thought his answer was really interesting. This is what he wrote. If you don't want to see him as a nice guy, even now, you can at least understand why he did what he did the way he did it. Why to Jordan, the end justifies the means. That's kind of why I asked him the question that does Michael Jordan care that people look at him as something other than a nice guy right now? And he says, absolutely he does. He doesn't understand why he does, but he does. And that's why he decided to do this docuseries in the first place, not because of LeBron or the parade or anything else, but he wanted to explain his methodology. You guys believe that?
I do 100% because I've lived it where I, at the same time, I really don't necessarily care what you think about me, but I want you to understand why I approach things the way that I approach them, because it's important the way that I finish, the way that I the desire to do certain things a certain way to accomplish the goals that I set out, not only for myself, but also for my teammates. Sometimes people gonna form their opinions about who you are anyway. You can't change their mind. But there are a few people out there that want to understand why you tick the way that you do. And it's easier for me to explain that to you and let you see it rather than have people try to form that for you. So I clearly understand where MJ's coming from.
Well, if you look at the blocks within the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I love going to because it really breaks down in a very thoughtful way what's important to us. Once you've taken care of, you know, food, shelter, you got some money, the very next thing on the list is feelings and how people feel about you. So, you know, the great scientist says once you got the food and you ain't worried about your food and your family straight, the very next thing that's important to a human being is just the community. And so you can talk all you want about how you don't care how people look at you, but the reality is you probably do. You just either have tried to turn it off, you try to mask it, or you wear it in your sleeve. But as far as, you know, the psychiatry of the human mind works, at some point we all care. It's just how you show that you care that matters.
Well, no one, and then no you look at the way that he conducted his business for his entire career. He was willing to sacrifice how people cared about him. I mean, you might care about it. You might not like the fact that people look at you a certain way and that they think that you're, you know, quote unquote, not a nice guy. But that it was also, in Michael Jordan's case, a conscious decision to say, all right, I'm going to do this regardless of the outcome because I want to win championships. Yes. I want to win basketball games. So I'm going to do it no matter what.
Absolutely, because there's a time and a place, though, that you want the narrative to stop. There is a time and a place that you want the narrative to stop. You know, I was throughout my career known as a blankety blankety blank.
Number 17.
Number 17. But at some point in time, if those people that's trying to set this narrative never get an opportunity to really get inside of your shell, at some point you invite them in. By sitting down and giving interviews so they can see who you are, opposed to when I walked into ESPN in Bristol for the first time, they hired me, but everybody walking around on eggshells because they think for the sight of if I say anything wrong to him, he's going to snap. Because all we know is he's aggressive and he doesn't take any BS. And so you had to get them to understand, no. Stop listening to the LZs of the world. Let me help you understand who I am, and now you can form that opinion.
Listen, I think a lot of people are willing to work with Jordan when it comes to saying this is what it takes to win, because he is the ultimate winner across all sports. Very few athletes get athletes from other sports to look to them and say, you're the best. Like, within your sport is one thing, but have other athletes, regardless of sports, like golf, tennis, what have you, whatever the sport is, to look at Michael Jordan as a gold standard. So there's a lot of room that's going to accommodate for him not being a nice guy. The question is he willing to forgive himself and not being a nice guy? Because that's where you really begin the process of coming to terms with what you had to do to win. Forgiving yourself for being an ass to guys at certain points, for punching people at a certain point, for always harassing guys at certain, you have to forgive yourself for that too.
Well,
maybe this is cathartic for him in this process as well.
Based on the way, and maybe I skipped over some or didn't see some, but based on the explanation as to why he punched Steve Kerr, it's because Steve Kerr kept hacking him, and then he hit him in the chest, and that's when he hauled off on Steve Kerr. Am I right? Did I say that right? Not exactly.
So my understanding of it was that they were guarding each other, and Phil kept calling ticky-tack fouls on MJ.
Yes.
And that MJ didn't like that, so he smacked Kerr and said, now that's a foul, and then they started fighting.
Yeah, no, he fouled him hard, and then Steve Kerr hit him in the chest, and then that's when he socked him.
Then they started fighting, right? Okay. But it was Phil Jackson calling a bunch of ticky-tack fouls on MJ that kind of set the whole thing in motion.
Right. But no matter how it got set, though, huh?
Yeah, I mean, if you're Steve Kerr, you're probably thinking, what the hell's going on around here?
Steve Kerr said, what you mean, Travis? He got, I didn't have anything to do with this.
Yeah. Well, I saw what I said.
I'm going to play the innocent role.
Yeah, right. But, you know, Steve Kerr's a perfect example here. You know, the way that he feels about Michael Jordan. He says, you know, he still sees him a lot for, you know, obvious reasons. Steve's still in the league and Michael Jordan's still involved in the league as an owner. But I just wonder if this series, because I feel about Michael Jordan exactly the way I did going into this, in that he's the greatest basketball player that I've ever seen. He was ruthless. He was willing to do anything, and he wanted to win above all else. I already knew those things. I got some more color in it. I got some more points to illustrate that. But I loved him going in. I love him right now. I don't know if this changes the way that anybody really feels about him, understanding the methodology. We already knew that this is how he rolls.
You know, I just – the methodology for me in players like this, I just love. I can't – that's the way I was played. That's the way I was. That's the way I've always been. I mean, I remember we playing Washington, and it's 21-0, and we're playing UW in my senior year in college. Now, I'm in college at this point in time, and Roberto Garrido is about 6'7", 330. Solid, though. Ooh, solid. It's a rock. Bench press 500 off the nest. And our offensive line is getting their asses kicked. And you thought that I had just lost my mind on the sideline. At the offensive line, in him. And when he stood up, I thought I saw a shadow. But at the same time, I needed to get him and them to understand how important this was to me to get to the Rose Bowl. And so it became an interesting compromise. Do I take a chance on him really snapping on me and breaking me in half? or do I enforce my will on him to get him to play better? And at the end of the day, his second half was different. And we came back, and the rest was history. But we were down 21-0. So I understand getting on people's ass when it matters. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really, the Kobe's and LeBron's and guys like Michael – and Jerry Rice, I understand that. I get it. I get it. I don't think I've seen bullies in sports that literally pick on dudes that can't defend themselves and got to bow down to them because that person has more power over them. I've seen that.
All right. The NFL MVP odds are out. Patrick Mahomes is at the top. Who is a sleeper for next season's NFL MVP? We'll get into that next on The Morning Show on 7 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
4-1. Those are the odds that Patrick Mahomes wins his second NFL MVP in the last 3 years. He's at the top of the odds at the Caesars Sportsbook in Las Vegas. Lamar Jackson checks in right behind him at 13-2. That would be back-to-back MVPs for Lamar Jackson. No surprise, guys, really, that Mahomes and Jackson are 1-2 on those lists, considering that they won the last two MVPs.
It's not a surprise, but I don't think Lamar at two. I think Lamar at two is a bit high for me. Patrick Mahomes certainly being number one, I would think, and I would argue with people, had he continued to have the progress that he was having prior to his little injury that he missed those couple weeks, he probably would have stayed on course to be back-to-back MVPs, because the momentum and going to the Super Bowl and having his team in the playoff hunt and winning the division would have carried into the voting. And so I think that would have given him a second MVP. Well, Lamar Jackson, it caught everybody by storm. He dazzled the country on a Monday night football game against the Lonely Rams in the Coliseum. He also lit fire against Cincinnati on a spin back move, splitting the double team through the crease to score a touchdown, highlight everywhere. So that it makes everybody intrigued. I don't know that he'll be able to do those things again this year. Not saying that he can't. I just don't think that it will be set up that way.
The statistically, MVPs typically fall back a year after they win the award for a variety of reasons. Teams not the same, different things are required for them, etc. But I would say that the idea that Lamar Jackson MVP chances are pulled back because you know, he's going to fall back wouldn't be the reason why he wouldn't repeat. I would say he wouldn't repeat because repeats just don't happen. Not very often. What we tend to do is get bored.
You just said that the statistics take a dip and a step back. So that would mean that if that's taking a step back, it's not because of his play. It's because defenses make adjustments and teams do different things in a different way to win. So therefore, his production is going to suffer because of that.
But what I was saying for the rationale isn't statistically driven. It's just flavor of the month driven, that we are just bored. And we typically don't like NFL quarterbacks being repeated as MVPs because we typically just don't like repeating ourselves. We want the next new thing.
Well, if a guy throws 50 touchdowns consecutive years in 10 interceptions and his team is 12-4, you're going to vote him in the MVP category. There's no question about that.
Well, let's use Mahomes as an example because his numbers did come back to earth. I mean, to a degree that they weren't, like you just said, Keith, 50 and 10 is one thing that you're not, that it's very unlikely that that's going to happen in consecutive years. But that doesn't mean that his impact on the game isn't exactly the same. And that's where I think that Mahomes has an almost, I don't want to say unique, but it really is an opportunity here because you go back a couple of years, he was the MVP. They got to the AFC Championship game last year. They win the Super Bowl. He's the Super Bowl MVP, and he has as much impact on those games as anybody. He may or may not put up mind-boggling numbers statistically. I mean, the odds are pretty good that they're always going to be excellent. But his impact, his value, if we're using the word in the award, most valuable player, that dude's value never fluctuates. He is the guy that makes that thing go.
Well, what happens is if he threw, I don't know what he threw in terms of statistics as touchdowns, but if he threw 35 touchdowns last year or 36 touchdowns last year,
only 26.
Throws, if 26 and he throws 30 yeah. this year and they win, he's carrying in the momentum he never loses despite who is there playing fabulous and outstanding. His momentum never suffers. The problem is guys' momentum suffer because they're not either playing as good or the team isn't playing good or they're playing good but the team isn't playing good or they get on a two-game losing streak. So immediately the voters decide, And even though their numbers may be averaged out to looking the same at the end of the year, they start looking at other stuff. If you stay on course and you do everything that you did the year prior, if Lamar Jackson did everything that he did this past year, he'll be the MVP. He'll be the MVP because he's carrying the MVP momentum into the season. But I don't believe, based on where defenses are going to adjust, the fact that there's going to be pressure when they play the Pittsburgh Steelers, there's going to be more pressure now because Ben Roethlisberger is coming back and we believe he'll be healthy. So that'll apply pressure to what Baltimore does. They get behind. Now all of a sudden they got to start throwing. Lamar throws a pick or two here. Now that shifts. All of those sort of things start to happen. It changes the look of what he is at the quarterback spot. Even though he may be winning and they may win the division, the look is different to the people that vote.
I really do think once you really look at who repeated over the years, it truly is more about PR than stats and impact. Like, you have to have stats and impact to be in the conversation, but then it becomes a PR push to me.
Like, is that why the PR idea, LZ? Is that why Dak Prescott's third? I mean, because Dak Prescott is not the third best quarterback in the league, but he's got the third best odds.
But he's coming into it. He's coming into it
without
no momentum. He's coming into it with zero.
So why is he so high? 9-1. He's the third best bet.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Because Dallas is expected to do great things. He's the quarterback, and it's America's team. So
if he does what he did last year in a little bit better and they win, now it pushes him up. But he may not surpass Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes may do slightly better with a lot of momentum coming in. He needs those guys to take a step back, and he needs to stay where he's at or better.
Crosstalk with George Sedano coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, time for Crosstalk. George Sedano joining us as well. What's going on, George? How are things?
All good, buddy. What's going on there? What do you guys got cooking today? I saw something about a mom draft today. What was that all about?
Yep. Okay, so here you go. It's a TV mom draft, right? Yeah. So there's really no criteria, just your favorite TV moms. Here are the teams. Team A, we've got Sophia from the Golden Girls. We've got Florida from Good Times, Carmela Soprano, and Rainbow Johnson from Blackish.
Okay.
Team B.
Strong team, teammate.
Team B is Mrs. Brady from the Brady Bunch.
Okay.
Sophia Vergara from Modern Family.
Ooh.
Marge Simpson. And Tammy Taylor from Friday Night Lights.
Ooh, okay. A little off the board. I wasn't expecting that, but okay.
Then you've got Team C, which is Felicia Rashad from The Cosby Show.
Yeah.
Katie Seagal from Married with Children.
Ooh.
Peg Bundy, of course.
Yeah.
Lucille Ball, I Love Lucy.
Uh-oh, and this one's strong so far.
Mrs. Cunningham from Happy Days.
Ooh. See, I would say A and C right now is the battle. And, man, I just think the first three on C are at – what were the first three? Give me Team A one more time.
Team A is Sophia from the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Florida. From Good Times.
Yeah.
Carmela Soprano and Rainbow Johnson.
You know, I'm going to go Team A only because I like Rainbow Johnson over Mrs. Cunningham. Slightly. I think she's a stronger TV mom. Even though Mrs. Cunningham was on longer, I'm going to go Team A just because of Rainbow Johnson giving her the edge.
You do understand the first, second, and third picks are strong.
No, they are really strong.
The fourth round pick, we had a pick that was there, and we needed to utilize it.
Oh, are you Team C, Key?
On something that we needed to take a look. We didn't want to pass on it because – it had been on the air for so long, we felt that there was something left in the tank, whether
longevity.
It was cooking,
whether
it was teaching the younger moms how to become a mom, whatever that was. So Team C decided to throw a flyer on that, not necessarily meaning that we need that mom.
Right.
We just felt that, what are we going to – we could have traded out of the pick for tomorrow's draft, but we decided to keep it.
Yeah, George, I would say Team C's first three are the strongest by far. But just that little edge with Rainbow over Mrs. Cunningham got me over
franchise,
the top.
Franchise player in Huxtable. Franchise. Yeah. It's not even close.
This is what George is trying to tell you, if I can speak for you, George.
Go ahead, LZ.
Because Keyshawn had the number one overall pick – it's easy to hit it out the park when you have the number one overall pick. The reason why he's focusing on the fourth pick is because that's when you learn who the GM is, how you draft. that's how you really feel a champion, and that's when you fell to pieces, Key. You hit it out the park with the number one pick, but once you got deep into the draft, you know, you lost your way. I can't
remember. I felt like you checked out, and obviously my team is Team B with Tammy Taylor on Friday Night Lights. I would just suggest that maybe you take 5 minutes and do a quick little YouTube deep dive.
Oh, no, I remember her. It's been a while, though, since I watched the show. But I just think the other – I mean, look, Sophia Vergara is a strong one. I don't think that people will underestimate her at their own peril is what I would say, literally and figuratively.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to mess with a Latina, okay?
That's why I said nepotism. He's going there because of that. Hey, I know you, George.
But listen, George is also from Miami. So I was thinking about that when I went Golden Girls.
Sophia is strong. Yeah, Sophia is strong. Yeah. Yeah. Sicily, 1936.
Exactly.
George, I want you to listen to this. We were talking about this early. Charles Barkley went on with Levitard yesterday and talked about how Michael Jordan was very selective in who he decided to go at. Let's take a listen to this very quickly.
Well, you know, you notice he has selective prosecution over there, right? He knows who to pick on. You know?
Right.
No, listen, there's certain guys you can't treat like that. Like, you have to know what guys you can treat badly, and they're going to accept it. You're screaming at guys all the time, punching guys. Come on, man. There's certain guys that will whoop the hell out of you if you try doing that. He has selective prosecution. I mean, Scott Burrell and Steve Kerr. I mean, come on, man.
That's a good point.
Does Charles have a point?
Yes, because Kevin Garnett used to go after Euros all the time. So I agree that there is selective enforcement there. I would absolutely agree with Charles.
So, George, my assessment was when you go back and you look at all the physical battles against the Pistons as well as the Knicks, he never went after the dudes who were actually knocking him down on the ground.
Right.
he always made sure that it was someone who's a little bit shorter than him.
Starks.
He confronted. Starks.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, man.
What I'm not going to do is I'm not about to sit here and let buy into that theory. I'm not doing that. I'm not about to sit here and allow you to try that. You trying it, LZ, and it ain't going to work.
It's not a theory. I've said this hours ago,
man.
You still haven't given me another name.
It ain't going to work. Ain't none of them ran up on him either.
We talked about
Charles Oakley is his boy. Oakley ain't going to run up on him. They boys. Who else was the enforcer?
Well, Anthony Mason. He didn't ever step to Anthony Mason, though. Anthony Mason's a crazy person.
Anthony Mason necessarily didn't do anything to warrant that. He had people on his side that would make sure that he didn't need to confront Anthony Mason.
All I'm saying is, Key, is that Charles Barkley started a conversation.
And again, you talk about the Pistons. And when you talk about the Pistons,
Michael
Jordan wasn't in that frame of mind when he was playing the Pistons. He didn't get into the frame of mind until after he defeated the Pistons and did what he did to Isaiah Thomas.
Well, I don't recall him actually.
Are you still mad because I picked Team A over because of Mrs. Cunningham?
No, I'm tired of LZ. I'm tired of LZ consistently hating on Michael Jordan. It's ridiculous. It's annoying. You need to stop it.
You know what's annoying? Your conversation about Michael Jordan and his baseball. That's what's annoying. You know what else
was
annoying? No, he was not. And
man, the dude hit 51 ribbies in Double A. Was that not impressive, Travis? Well, I guess Travis is no.
I think the answer to that is more nuanced. I will give you both credit on this. Like, his batting average stunk. He couldn't hit a curveball. He was basically Pedro Serrano in Major League. But when he did connect, 50 RBIs a lot. Even Walker Buehler did tweet out, "Hey, I know he's a pitcher, but he says I never hit 200 in Double A." It is harder than you think. Like, I saw Preston Wilson, who works for the MLB Network, talk about the challenges of someone at 31 trying to play Double A baseball. I will give him more credit for baseball than most people will.
You have a show to do, Sedano. I'll let you hate on Michael Jordan on your show.
I'm not hating on Michael Jordan. I just said he was good.
MJ next, Sedano.